Thanks. Hi, good afternoon. I'm going to be presenting some research I'm doing for my master's at Oregon State University. So I just wanted to talk really quickly about the potato. Potato is the most important crop in the Columbia Basin where I do my research. It's eastern Oregon and eastern Washington. I think typically we think of the below ground in the potato, but wanted to show this picture of a green, luscious potato field to compare it to this, a field that's been severely afflicted with Verticillium wilt, which is a soil-borne pathogen that's caused by Verticillium dahliae. Verticillium wilt is really ubiquitous in potato production fields. It's a major problem. It can lead to very high yield losses, and part of the problem is that it's spread by both seed and by soil. So potatoes are clonally propagated and come with some tear dirt attached to the seed piece often. So even if you have really good sanitation practices on your farm, you're still likely to have this pathogen in your field. Another reason that this pathogen is so problematic is that the pathogen produces these black resting structures, microscorrhoea. See them here in the picture. They can persist in the soil for up to 18 years, so you can't really rotate or do any kind of crop control of that matter of that method. Also, there's over 400 hosts of Verticillium wilt, including a lot of weed species, and so it's just not really a viable option. Consequently, most growers use metam sodium, which is a soil fumigant, for control, but there's increased pressure from consumer groups to reduce soil fumigant application. So that's sort of the impetus of this research. It's not to find an essential oil that is as effective as metam sodium. I don't know if that's possible, but actually to find control methods that may mitigate some of the effects of the disease and make it possible for growers to have some combined treatment approaches that could kind of bring that yield loss down and make it viable to really reduce dependence on this soil fumigant. So essential oils. I think when we think of essential oils, we may think of these lovely scented things that you put behind your ears or use for relaxation. It's not exactly what I'm going for today. There are other plant-based products that are more commonly used in agriculture, like pyrethroids. It's a derivative of a chrysanthemum species, used as insecticides often in organic and in some other management systems. Also, neem oil, you may have heard, has some insecticidal properties as well as nematicidal properties. That is usually considered an essential oil. So we're sort of incorporating a little bit now, and if you look at the literature, there is some evidence that essential oils do have efficacy. In this paper, there's antimicrobial activity against other soil-borne pathogens. This is against a bacterial wilt in tomato for a Fusarium species, which is another really problematic soil-borne pathogen in a lot of cropping systems. This is salicylic acid, a paper looking at salicylic acid, which is one of the treatments that I used. Salicylic acid is not technically an essential oil. It also is known as oil of wintergreen, but it is thought to induce a plant's immune response, and so I decided to put it in the research. But again, there's evidence in the literature that it's effective. And then the last paper I'll show is some essential oils being used against botrytis, which is a gray mold. So I guess when I think of essential oils, I wonder if there's an opportunity. I think certainly there's a lot to be explored in this field, and it's an exciting time to be thinking about it as we're looking to find alternatives to different treatments. So for methods, I selected my treatments by doing some preliminary work in the lab. I wanted to see first if any of these essential oils inhibited the growth of my pathogen in vitro. So what I did was I made these petri dishes. You can see here, this one is yellow, so that's with a turmeric extract, actually, that wasn't very effective, so I didn't put it into the greenhouse. But basically what I did was I made media using an NP10 media, which is has all the nutrients that Verticillium needs to thrive, and I spiked the media with different essential oils of interest. So I tested over 24 essential oils in the lab, and I plugged the middle of the plate with a plug of an actively growing pathogen colony, and then I measured growth from the edge of the plug to the edge of the colony 17 and 35 days after to assess disease severity, and not disease severity, to assess the effect of the essential oil on the pathogen growth. Now, the thing with this methodology, you don't really know if the essential oil is kind of killing all life or it just has an effect on the pathogen, so that was the impetus for putting it into the greenhouse later to see if it might be phototoxic. So in the yellow plate, we're looking at an extract of turmeric. You can see there is pathogen growth. And in the lighter colored plate, the clear plate, it's actually a carvacrol, which is an extract of oregano, and there's no growth of the pathogen after both 17 and 35 days. So with that, these are the treatments I decided to use in the greenhouse. Cinnamon, clove, lemongrass, carvacrol, and thymol, which are extracts of oregano and thyme, respectively. The salicylic acid, which I already talked briefly about, garlic, and then I looked at two fertilizer treatments, calcium chloride and ammonium phosphate, which some previous research that I had done looking at different chemical control options and also fertilizer applications, those two were found to be efficacious, and so I also did some combination treatments in the greenhouse. And then I had some controls, both a non-inoculated and an inoculated with no treatment, and then also an inoculated with Tween 80, which I used as a surfactant to keep my essential oils in solution when I applied them to my seed piece. I'm going to go kind of a little bit quickly over the methods. I have a few slides, but basically I replicated in two greenhouses in 1 year. I mentioned this is a master's project, so of course there is the challenge of time. I used sterilized soil and nuclear seed, and I kept the amount of soil, the amount of application per weight of seed, and then also the fertilizer and water consistent throughout to not bias any of the data. The reason I used sterilized soil and nuclear seed, of course, that does kill other life in the soil, but it also ensures that any pathogen I'm seeing measured in my plant is that I've put there myself, that there's not different levels of pathogen in the pots that I don't have control over. And these are the rates that I applied. I applied the highest rate of the essential oils that I tested in the lab. So for inoculation, I made a conidial suspension. I grew that out in the lab in a big kind of beaker, and then I applied 50 milliliters of a 10 to the 6 conidial suspension at the base. This is the picture of it kind of going in. And then I applied 500 milliliters of water to push the conidia down into the root zone so that they can actively infect. I did that 21 days after full emergence in the greenhouse. And I collected some data. I was particularly interested in emergence data and in some of the vigor data because I had some ideas that perhaps some of the essential oils were going to be phytotoxic, which of course is not going to be beneficial for disease management if you're also killing your crop. So I was particularly interested in those two metrics, as well as the harvest data and also colony forming units per gram of plant sap. So this is a picture of the destructive sampling and stem crushing that we do in the lab. This is one of our high school students who works with us at the extension station. 21 days after inoculation, we pulled the plants out of the pot and separated the tubers from the stems, and then sterilized the stem to make sure there was no infected soil there, crushed out the sap, and plated on these plates. Again, this is the same NP10 media that I mentioned earlier. And these black colonies here are the microsclerotia growing. So I measured those and did a calculation for colony-forming units per milliliter of sap. So it's sort of a commonly used indice for disease severity for verticillium wilt. It's a little bit of a tedious method, and there's some effort to look at more quantitative, kind of more molecular techniques, but this is sort of the lab standard at this point. So with the emergence data, I was actually pretty excited to see on the x-axis we're looking at treatments, and that's plotted against number of days after first pot emergence, so I sort of weighted the greenhouse against itself, not against planting date. In the orange boxes is one greenhouse, and then the blue boxes are another greenhouse. There were really no differences by treatment for emergence, so what that indicated to me was that none of the treatments were phytotoxic. Again, I'm applying these high levels of essential oil to the seed piece, so I think if there was going to be a phytotoxic effect, I would have definitely observed it. However, there was a lot of variation by treatment. I think it's funny in the greenhouse, you have in a way so much control. You can use sterilized soil and nuclear seed, but in a way you have less control. There's temperature gradients from one side of the greenhouse to the other, and light differences based on what side of it is. So it's a little bit less uniform than in the field and more uniform in other ways. So the black dots that we're seeing kind of around the graph are definitely sort of outliers. Some of the reps emerged way later than others. But again, there was no trend really by treatment. When we look at yield, similarly, there weren't really a lot of differences in yield, which I was pleased with because it indicates, again, that none of the treatments have a negative impact on tuberization or tuber growth. Now, you can see in this picture at the bottom, this is a quarter here, and then these are the tubers. So the tubers I was pulling out of the pot were really small, but you have to think with that small amount of soil, you're not really taking a real yield as you would be in the field. Again, I did see variation by rep in both greenhouses. I did see significant differences of total harvest weight in one greenhouse and some minor trends. Ammonium phosphate did yield the worst in both, and then a carbachol plus ammonium phosphate was in the bottom four in both greenhouses. Ammonium phosphate isn't really an inhibitor of yield of potatoes in the field, so I don't know if it's just in that kind of small pot environment that like maybe gets too close to the root zone or it's too concentrated, but I don't take from this that ammonium phosphate is really going to be a challenge for potato yields in the future. And then, of course, the inoculated without treatment and the calcium chloride alone were in the top six. We see that the non-inoculated is not one of the highest yields, so again, wanted to show the yield, but think that the differences are pretty minor. There were, again, no differences in vigor by treatment. Again, variation by rep. So actually, if you look in this picture here on the right, you can see these plants are pretty small, and then they sort of increase by height as you go this way. I did see trends like that in the greenhouse, not as much by treatment, but sort of by rep and just by block. And so the way I assessed vigor was by taking plant height weekly and then also measuring the number of nodes that each plant had. So was pleased that none of the essential oils, and especially the salicylic acid, which is thought to induce an immune response in the plant, there was no fitness cost to the plant based on the treatment application. However, there also wasn't really a strong impact on disease. Eight treatments did have more disease than the non-inoculated control. We're looking here at treatment on the x-axis against log of colony-forming units per milliliter of sap on the y. I think the reason that there wasn't more variation and more significant differences by treatment here is because there seemed to be a lot of variation, actually. Some of these treatments had zero colony-forming units on the plates. This is the non-inoculated control where I was pleased there was no verticillium. But some of the other ones also did have data points where there was no verticillium. So I think that a little bit skewed the data. But I did observe some trends in both greenhouses. There was the most disease in the top 50%, both greenhouses, for the salicylic acid plus the ammonium phosphate, the carvacrol plus the ammonium phosphate, garlic, salicylic acid plus calcium chloride, salicylic acid alone. And then we had the least disease or the lowest 50% in both greenhouses for the carvacrol, the cinnamon, and the ammonium phosphate alone. So I think that more work would need to be done to really tease out what's happening here. I thought it was interesting that I saw the least disease with the carvacrol, which is the oregano extract, and the ammonium phosphate alone, but then combined they had the most disease, or they were in some of the highest disease categories. It looks like the salicylic acid was not effective in reducing disease, as all of those treatments had the most disease, were in the most disease. So it looks like the immune response of the plant wasn't really induced by a seed application. So I'll talk about some conclusions. As I mentioned, no essential oils were phytotoxic, so I think that does kind of provide an opportunity for future research. Because it's kind of a newer field, not a lot is known about. There seems to be a lot of research that's been done in the lab, but not a lot that's been done in actually plant systems. So I was excited to see that there wasn't either like a fitness penalty, phytotoxicity, or decreases in vigor. Opens the door to potential future research. But that said, it wasn't that effective when it was applied to the seed. I think if I was to further this research, I would really look at application method. When metium sodium is applied, it's applied as a soil fumigant, so it's sort of blanket applied to the field in advance of cropping. Also explore different rates in a in vivo situation. And then further research, of course, looking at the cost. When I'm purchasing the essential oils, you're getting a small amount from Sigma or something, but really looking at how that would work on a bigger scale, how would a grower implement it into a field system, and also the efficacy for improving of the experimental system. You know, in the sort of natural system, the pathogen and the host are in a different relationship where the mycosporosia germinate based on root exudates. You're not applying conidia into your crop 21 days after emergence. And so I think we'd have to kind of work a little bit more in a real applied system. But again, I think this preliminary data does illustrate that there is perhaps an opportunity to explore more with essential oils, and that if growers continue to receive pressure to reduce metium sodium application, certainly I think that this research could be continued. So with that, I'm happy to entertain questions if there's time. I'd like to thank Phil Hom and Lyndon Porter, who have been my mentors in this work, Robert Kading, Don Hornick, Dan Sullivan, Ken Frost, Ken Johnson, Todd Temple, USDA for funding my graduate fellowship, and then the staff at my experiment station and at the USDA ARS. So thanks.
Got time for one question?
The carvacrol, yeah.
Yeah, and then it looks like
So the question is, it's around the sort of the natural system, and do I think in the field setting would some of the results I saw in the lab sort of be reflected more in the field? I think really we don't know. That's kind of what's exciting about using essential oils, is there's so much unknown. But I think it's really that translation from the in vitro to the in vivo that is unknown. Of course, in an unsterilized soil, there's so many other microorganisms and soil ecology going on. That's all kind of killed off when you sterilize the soil. Verticillium actually is often found in patches where you'll find really high concentrations in one part of your field and low in the other. So it's really a tricky pathogen. A lot of people have worked on, actually most pathologists that I meet say, oh, I've worked on verticillium before at some point, and still there's so much that we struggle with for control. So I wish I had a better answer, but I think that it's hard to translate, it's hard to know. Yeah, so thanks.